I'd like to introduce our next speaker, which is co-founder of an organization called Think Forward, which Carl says is finally an NGO representing the next generation's interests. Everyone, please welcome Sonia Arkal.
Good evening, everyone. As Bo said, my name's Sonia and I run Think Forward. And we are an advocacy group for young Australians who want to see issues of intergenerational fairness front and centre of policy making in this country. So today I want to touch on what intergenerational fairness is, why it's relevant to housing, and how important the work of advocacy organisations like Grounded will be to addressing Australia's largest and most important policy issue of housing. But before I start, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people, whose land I grew up on, and whose land I call my home in Perth in Western Australia. I'd like to acknowledge their elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge that intergenerational thinking has been a part of First Nations philosophy for tens and thousands of years. And as we think about alternative economic models, I look not to the US or the UK, but to First Nations policymaking and philosophical frameworks, which are grounded in values such as custodianship, sustainability, and obligations to future generations. So what is intergenerational fairness other than a word with lots of syllables? Well, it describes this idea that economic and social fairness between the generations is a key value of our society. It's not about bashing baby boomers or avocado toast. It's about this implicit intergenerational bargain that underpins the relationship between younger and older Australians and our tax and spending priorities that facilitates that. It compromises two fundamental ideas. One, that working age Australians contribute to the care of older Australians and younger Australians can expect the generation that comes next to do the same. And second, that economic growth and social development will enable each successive generation to enjoy rising living standards. So young people want to live a quality life, confidently move through the same stages as generations prior, an education, a well-paid career, secure homes, starting a family, and secure retirement. But many young people today in Australia are fearful that they won't be able to enjoy those same economic stages of life. And in fact, there's economic evidence to say that the millennial generation is widely forecasted to be the first generation since Federation with worse economic outcomes than generations before. Now, we think this is because of short-termism, whether it's because 3-year election terms or market-based models in housing. As a society, we are losing our ability to make policy in the interests of younger and future generations. We've lost our ability to think in generational timelines in key policy areas like taxation, infrastructure, and of course, housing. So younger Australians are less likely today to own a home than young people in the past. In 2016, 45% of 30-year-olds owned a home. In 1981, the figure was much higher at 67%. And those that do are taking on much bigger debt and increasing financial stress, limiting their life outcomes and decisions, as Carl's mentioned earlier. And this isn't because of discretionary funding or young people eating out all the time. In fact, the Grattan Institute showed that young people today are spending less on non-essential items like alcohol, clothing, and personal care, and more on necessities like housing, more than three decades ago. So the problem with the current approach in how we are thinking about the intergenerational economic impacts for young people is that we look at the symptoms. Governments love talking about youth mental health and have spent billions of dollars in services in youth mental health. They don't love talking about the social determinants of youth mental health, things like stable and secure housing. And governments bemoan, you know, lowering birth rate, the fact that we're not replacing our current populations and there's not going to be enough Australians to support our ageing population. But they do little to address a key ingredient for family prosperity, which is stable and secure housing. And when they do try to approach the problem, it continues this idea of housing as an asset class. A I find it quite interesting. There's this quirk in Australian policymaking where all policy problems can be solved through our superannuation system. When Social Security wasn't enough to live on during COVID payments, government let people withdraw from super. When first homeowners needed help to build a deposit, let people withdraw from super. The superannuation system seems to be a panacea for fixing so many problems that the superannuation system was not designed to do. And that makes me deeply uncomfortable, because the super system was designed for one thing: to ensure adequate incomes during retirement. The jury is out on whether the latest iteration of this super-reliant approach, the Housing Accord, will move the dial on social and affordable housing. I hope encouraging big capital will result in more supply and increased affordability. While the jury might be out on what the outcomes might be, what we do know is that this approach to the housing affordability crisis is doubling down on this idea of housing as an investment class. This is why I'm really excited about the potential that community land trusts can play in Australia, and of course the role of Grounded in making it a reality. At Think Forward, we talk about intergenerational fairness. And for me, community land trusts are really exciting from an intergenerational fairness perspective for two reasons. Firstly, the model is suited to intergenerational decision-making. So studies on intergenerational decision-making have shown that the more decentralized decision-making is, the further power is away from centralized or federal governments, the more inclined people are to think long-term. So CLTs are locally controlled and democratically accountable through a membership that is open to anyone who lives or works in the defined community. This includes occupiers of land and properties that the trust owns. So this means that CLTs are not just about collective ownership of property, but also about redistributing power from the exploitative systems and toward community-led planning and development for the future. The second reason I'm really excited about CLTs from an intergenerational perspective is that the 2021 ABS census data showed that millennials are about to overtake baby boomer generation as the largest cohort in Australia. If you include Gen Z, they already are. So I hope this means that the traditional barriers that you spoke about to new models of housing and organising the economy may be lowered. Taking a punt here, but I think that the millennial generation are more open to alternative economic models. The most obvious example of this is the share economy, the move away from ownership in things such as cars to collective modes of using resources, such as rideshare companies. This has distorted the ownership models of generations prior. CLTs are a natural extension of this trend towards the share economy, with, of course, the benefit of being community-led. I'd like to finish with some reflections on the importance of Grounded in advocacy and organising. If community-led models are to become a reality, the work of organisations like Grounded will be crucial. Crucial to navigating the different levels of government required to make this model a reality. Crucial to combating the forces that may seek to undermine community-led models. And of course, most importantly, crucial to raising awareness and connecting this model with the communities that need it most, whether that's communities in rural and regional Australia or those that have lived with housing insecurity for generations. When I was reading about community land trusts and the model, I was surprised to learn that it's taken off in the US and the UK and is only now beginning to be taken seriously in Australia. Even though it's taken a while, I'm optimistic that of a future Australia where we have an economic ecosystem that backs a more diverse model of land ownership. To me, this model holds great promise because it's a part of Australian DNA. We are the envy of the world due to things like Medicare and HEX, policies that use collective models to provide security for individuals. Again, CLTs are a continuation of this policy-making tradition in Australia. And I'm thrilled that organisations like Grounded will be working on this to make this a reality for generations to come. So congratulations.